Thank you so much for being with us tonight. And we have a very big audience, and we started in the morning having heard from Professor Yunus some words about everybody can be an entrepreneur. And then I remembered our meeting 15 years ago when we discussed your book, The Other Path, which is called in German grassroots entrepreneurship, I would call it. And so we still work on this, and as we started today with this theme, I think now Günther and me, we would like to discuss with you that everybody can be an entrepreneur. This is what you are trying to tell us. Hello, Simon.
yes, of course. Tell me, how long would you, we didn't talk about that yesterday, how long would you want to have a conversation now about this? You want me to say a few words before?
Yes, I think it would be great, but when you could start like a 5 minutes introduction, and then we would have half an hour, is that right? So we have half an hour.
This is fine, very good. Well, I have long admired the work that Günther and you are doing on entrepreneurship, because I think it is crucial that the word always be understood. In our case, of course, in developing countries, we try to convince people that what they are already doing, otherwise they wouldn't be able to survive, is actually something that can be reinforced by institutions, but it is indispensable to gain prosperity. You know, once you have prosperity, once you stop being poor, there are so many things that you can do with prosperity. Take care of your health, take care of your family, build all those good things that you need in life, have films, have books, have your families as solid as possible. But what I understand and I've always found extremely interesting and admirable about your effort in developed countries, concretely in Germany, is that, of course, those who invented entrepreneurship, those who made it possible, starting 18th, 19th century, may have forgotten the virtues of entrepreneurship. And that's quite typical of any people after a few generations have passed. So let me dwell upon that, at least the way I see it, as a South American who looks towards Europe and tries to explain to the people I have to talk to and I work with in Africa, Asia, Latin America, even the former Soviet Union. Somewhere about the 17th, 18th century, feudalism and patrimonialism began collapsing in Europe. That is to say, the old structures that you had that were pyramidal and where basically the king, the feudal lords, and a small elite decided how production and social structures were organized, all of that was collapsing. And as that collapsed, the market started coming into place, the market and commerce. And that took form in the Industrial Revolution. Well, it produced a lot of disorder because, of course, Europe began shifting from one system of production and organization to another, which is also always very traumatic. And though we all hear about Adam Smith and we all hear about Marx, we forget that they basically drew up the big theory. But the structures of how entrepreneurship was to work, the systems of contracts, of property rights, of law that put down the rules of how people were to structure things were actually done by a series of lawyers and economists and politicians that are not well recorded in history. You had people in Germany like Gerendorf. You had people in France like Charles Coquelin. You had people in the United States like Jefferson and later Abraham Lincoln. They put down the structures. And the structures were put in to facilitate the work of entrepreneurs. And when you read them, though many of these people aren't fully published, you can only get them in journals that were published about 200 years ago, they are continually talking about how important it is to bring things together. If you remember, both Marx and Adam Smith said that one of the characteristics of the post-feudal world was the division of labor. All of a sudden, guilds weren't doing just one special thing. People were specializing. Somebody, you know, an automobile could come in from 13,000 places. Marx talked about a locomotive made out of 5,000 parts that could come from 300 places. Adam Smith talked about a wire that could be converted into a pin by actually putting together 12 people. There's that famous experience and tale of Mead, how he explains how a pencil is made out of wood that comes from Oregon, but the wood, nobody likes it white, so you have to bring in a dye from France, and because it has to be dry kiln, you need an oven that is fabricated in Canada, and because the pencil has to contain graphite, you have to bring in graphite from Sri Lanka, but because the graphite actually breaks, then you have to bring in candelilla wax from Mexico so as to soften it so that it isn't so brittle, because nobody likes to hold the pencil in his hand and get a thorn in it. You have to give it 6 layers of lacquer, some of which come from chemistry of Switzerland and Germany, because we humans make mistakes. We always like an eraser at the end of the pencil, but we don't like it black, we like it pink, and that means it's got to come from Saudi Arabia, and it's got to be united to the pencil with a little filament of a metal that is made out of zinc from Peru and copper from Chile and black nickel from Nigeria. By the end, you look at a pencil and it's made out of 17 countries. So the challenge in the 19th century of the Europeans was, with all of this division of labor spread out throughout Europe and the world, now, who brings it together? And the reply is, the locomotive is brought together and the pencil is brought together by entrepreneurs. That's what entrepreneurs do. And from developing countries, it's a very clear phenomenon, because we are always told that we have the natural resources. And we do have a lot of natural resources, and our potential is immense. For every 400 holes drilled in the United States for minerals, petroleum, or whatever, in Latin America, there's one hole drilled. And probably for every 400, 500 holes drilled in Europe, there's one hole drilled in Africa. So our potential is immense. But nevertheless, we're so poor. So the question is, why? And the reply to that is because the people who know how to bring things together are the people who have benefited from that culture that comes from Western Europe and comes from North America, which is the culture of bringing things together. And so the typical examples are, of course, Switzerland, that has no cocoa, but together with Belgium, makes the best chocolates in the world. It has no sugar, and they still make the best chocolates in the world. While we make the sugar, we make the cocoa, and we can't sell you our chocolates.
Okay. And yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and we've got all your metals, yeah. And we've got everything that makes a watch, but it's these Swiss who go around putting our metals together and making the watches, so it's entrepreneurs.
So when do we have the next Peruvian Swiss giant, the chocolate giant here?
We should do that, but you see, the thing at the end is not who has the natural resources, but who brings them together, and those are the entrepreneurs.
Okay.
That's why entrepreneurship is important.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I think Günther has a question, because this is exactly the question, that who brings it together, and can everybody do that?
Good. Well, of course everybody could do that. First of all, you Germans can certainly do that. I mean, you're the guys who brought Volkswagen together. You're the guys who brought all the big entrepreneurs, big entrepreneurial things. I have a heater in every time my back aches, and it's made in Germany. I have an automobile outside, a Volkswagen, and it's Germany. I mean, of course you're the people who can bring it together, but you may have lost some of the culture, Or maybe you may have lost some of the admiration from entrepreneurs. Because you see, one of the problems that I think you're directing yourself at, Sven, is this, that the human mind, the entrepreneurs, the human mind, which is so creative, has two sides to it. It can be very creative and positive, but it can also be use its intelligence to make mistakes, to do nasty things, to take advantage of the neighbors and to take advantage of the friends. And therefore, what has maybe happened over the years, I'm guessing, in Western Europe, is as we have seen some of the negative things that very imaginative people can do, we have focused too much on controlling the negative sides of entrepreneurship demeaning it and not knowing how to control it, especially with the last recession. And we have forgotten about the good side. So it's like everything that's human, like a knife. You can use it to do good things and you can use it to do bad things.
I think that that's absolutely in line with what we discussed today, that on the one hand, I remember that entrepreneurs are the ones that give jobs, whereas we maybe in Western Europe have more or less only concentrated on taking jobs. So Günther, you have now the question here in front of you, I think.
Hernando, our theme is how to empower everybody for entrepreneurship. And you can take the view from outside on the German culture, but you have been in Germany many times, you were invited many times. What is lacking in Germany right now? What is lacking to push for more entrepreneurship? I think we all agree that everybody has the qualifications, the possibilities for entrepreneurship, but something is missing. From outside, seen from outside into Germany, what do you think is missing?
Well, the first thing I think that is missing, and which is what I suspect that you're doing, is reminding people of how important it is that when you lose it, it could be fatal, or at least it could retard you over many years, is a respect for what entrepreneurship is. I think at one moment we were talking about when my last book was published in Germany, The Mystery of Capital. I remember that the title was a very appropriate one, of course, in the United States, in North America, in Asia, in Latin America. It's a book that's sold about now, maybe it's been translated into over 30 languages, sold over 2 million copies. But I do remember one very particular thing about Germany, which was that every time I went to have a book presentation, just because I had the word capital there and it was associated with the notion that entrepreneurs are important, of course, my main readership, at least the one I was pointing to, was Third World, I remember having felt clear hostility. In other words, I was out there in the far right coming in to talk about things that were wicked or that were not appropriate. So my feeling was that for one reason or other, at least the intellectual class that I was faced with ab initio had a certain hostility towards it. So I have a feeling, as you say, everybody can do entrepreneurship. There, your challenge may be the one of recuperating a culture in favor of that entrepreneurship, understanding that that the world is made out of many little things, and the whole challenge is to make them relate to each other. I can't help but think of a German speaking philosopher who supposedly was the biggest and the most important philosopher of the 20th century, Ludwig Wittgenstein, when he was asked to define in the most succinct terms, which is very hard for a Latin American, of course, we speak on for ages, what the world was, what was a definition of the universe, he said the universe is made out of things in relationship to each other. So what he basically said is the world is full of little micro, I think he called them in German, Sachverhalte, small little things but they only make sense to the human being, and they only can be profitable if combined. If you look around you in your room or you go home, whether you're in Germany or whether you're in Peru, nothing has been made by one person. Nothing. Look at any room. Nothing has been made by one person. Everything takes a lot of persons to do it, and the people that put it together are entrepreneurship. And if you look at it that way, then you may be able to bring back that culture and respect for entrepreneurship, and that may be your biggest challenge.
Anandu, if I understand it rightly, you say the blockade is mentally with our brains, that we do not really have an open access, have an open mind towards entrepreneurship. Usually people say there's not enough capital, there's not enough qualification, there's not enough market or something. I understand you say it's not a lack of capital, it's not a lack of qualifications, it's a lack of mental openness. Could we put it like that?
Well, absolutely, and history is there to back you up. You remember Gunther, and I'm sure that many of our friends there, for those who have an interest in foreign affairs, that we in Peru had a president of Japanese origin called Fujimori. And in fact, not only did we have a president of German origin, between Brazil and Peru, we have about 6 million Japanese. And these 6 million Japanese came to Peru and Brazil between 1930 and 1940. And the question was, why did they come to Peru and Brazil? Because in 1930 and 1940, Peru and Brazil were 3 to 4 times richer than Japan. It didn't matter if Japan had a big army. You know, Saddam Hussein also had a big army. The question is, they were a relatively poor country compared to us. And South Korea had a GNP per capita that was about 1/4 of that of Peru. But today, ever since after the Second World War, they decide to become entrepreneurial economies. Now they have a GNP per capita that is 11 times to 14 times bigger than that of Peru, and maybe 8 times to 6 times bigger than Brazil. So here you have two countries that were poor developing countries in the past, Japan and South Korea, that because there was a huge push towards creating prosperity and entrepreneurship, became very rich countries very fast, and they have hardly any natural resources. And of course, as you can also see, they hardly had capital. And in the case of South Korea, they hardly had qualifications. But when you have the human spirit to do it, and you culturally assimilate it, and you respect it, and you enhance it with laws and political moves that are correct, it all comes together. Capital is built, and qualifications are taught, and it's not a matter of centuries, as we have seen. The other, of course, example that you've got is China. I mean, China is still a poor country. We Peruvians are still twice as rich as the Chinese. But the huge leap forward that they made started with Deng Xiaoping in 1978. And as you know, they don't have much, they didn't have much natural resources or capital. The proof of that, of course, is that they're still buying natural resources all over the world. And they've only now begun creating a big capital basis. And qualifications is something that they've been putting together over the last 30 years or less. So of course, these other things, capital, knowledge can come along, but what Europeans seem to illustrate is that the spirit of entrepreneurship is also something that you have to keep alive or create.
I think that this is absolutely true, that I remember Günther talking one time about economic illiteracy we have here, and this is what has developed in these countries you have just described, that they have found ways to establish entrepreneurship among the people. Hernando, thank you so much for all this valuable information. And what I remember, just to maybe you can help me to sum up the most important ideas you gave, but your perception is that we might have lost the appreciation or the respect for entrepreneurship, which has helped to build Germany to quite a rich country, and we should be more proud of our entrepreneurs.
Well, that could be in. As you know, I visited Germany many times. I have a lot of very good German friends like yourselves. I appreciate so many things that have come from Germany, your philosophers, your industrial products, your music, your poetry, especially, of course, in the world of ideas. Immanuel Kant was a crucial philosopher for me to understand the world, the categories of understanding. But it may be that from what I hear and learn from you, and from what I see in the papers, you have taken for granted the importance that entrepreneurship and initiative mean. I wonder if it isn't also a political matter, because any philosophy of economy has its good side and its bad sides. And capitalism, within which entrepreneurship is usually associated, has become a very bad word. And so you may want to use your big, great, complicated philosophical minds of Germany to extract one thing from the other, singularize it. Yeah. And just like socialism has brought us so many interesting things of humanity, the possibility to be solidary, to care about the poor, it's also a question of also thinking that what is today associated with capitalism also has some good seeds. And you have to sort out the bad from the good and put things into place again.
Anando, thank you so much to share your insights with us. It's always incredible to listen to you. I hope that during your next stay in Europe, you can spare some time with us in a conference like this. Thank you very much.
I'm very grateful to have you chosen. Thank you, Gunther. Thank you, Sven. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your time. Thank you.